All right, Andy McHugh joins us. He's a former president of Sabre. That should give you enough about his background. But he's written a definitive biography of the fascinating and elusive Walter O'Malley. And he was the man who changed the way a country thinks about its national pastime, baseball. Wise and engaging, a must-read for every historian in the game, and that is just one of the reviews of the book. Andy, nice to have you with us. It's an outstanding book. It really is well done.
Well, thank you, Marty. I appreciate that. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, how did you come upon Walter O'Malley? Now, for me, as a kid, I saw him, and I actually, believe it or not, my personal story with Walter O'Malley, when I lived in Miami Beach, we would go up to Vero Beach as spring training, and I did it in the... And Walter O'Malley was there, and I actually, he asked me to go buy him a hot dog. And I actually, and I swear to God, it's a true story, and I actually did. I was at Vero Beach to see the Dodgers play the old Washington Senators that day. How about that?
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about that's that? Amazing.
Yeah. That's, so how did you come upon O'Malley? Why O'Malley?
Well, I mean, I'd been born and raised in L.A., and I'd been a Dodger fan, so I was always very aware of him. And then through most of my life, I was a newspaper reporter who covered business. So I was interested in him in that way because he was clearly a very business-oriented owner and very successful at it. And I also thought that a lot of the stuff, almost all of the stuff we were seeing about the guy was really came out of New Yorkers' unhappiness with the fact that he'd moved the team. I mean, I'd sit there in the stands and think about, you know, Dick Young of the Daily News, and Dick thought Walter's first name was Greedy. Every time he mentioned it, it was Greedy Walter O'Malley. And I'm sitting in Dodger Stadium, and I'm thinking, there's no advertising in this stadium. He's got the lowest ticket prices in the league. You know, this is not a greedy person. And this, the kind of contradiction interested me that, you know, the image was one thing and there's some truth in the image. There's no doubt about that. But the reality was something else. And so that intrigued me. And I just started digging and the story got more and more interesting.
Well, they did give him about $100 million piece of land for coming to L.A. that he built his own stadium on. That was a nice gift.
Yeah, well, it wasn't quite a gift. I mean, he gave them something. He gave them Wrigley Field. The old PCL ballpark in exchange, and that was in a neighborhood that they wanted to redevelop where they think they needed parks, and that's what the Wrigley Field property is today. And they'd spent a number of years trying to find somebody who would take the Davis Ravine property off of their hands, and nobody would. They couldn't figure out a use for it. So, you know, it wasn't like it was a prime piece of land. Well, it was a prime piece of land, but nobody really appreciated it except O'Malley.
Yeah, he had that vision of
he did.
Yeah, he had the vision in New York too, but Robert Moses wouldn't go for it, and that sort of got him to L.A.
Yeah, I think Moses was the biggest part of it, but that wasn't all. I mean, O'Malley thought he was very well connected politically through his father and then his own life. And yet when push come to shove, he really couldn't get other people in Brooklyn and in the city to support him against Moses. It's not like Moses was undefeatable. I mean, he opposed other projects which went ahead and got built. But O'Malley just couldn't put together the coalition that could really kind of overwhelm Moses' political position. Brooklyn cared greatly, but the other boroughs just, not a big deal. I'm not going to do anything that really helps Brooklyn. Moses was definitely the biggest obstacle, but it was not a cut and dried thing where it's all Moses' fault.
Mover and Shaker, a great title, and it's a great book Thank cover you. As well. I enjoy looking at the cover. It's just a great picture of O'Malley with some cartoon figures around it. Very good. Andy McHugh is with us, McCue. The book is put out by Nebraska Press, and they've done a good job with many of the books they put out. Andy, what did you learn about McNally, about O'Malley? I'm putting you together and making you Dave McNally here. What did you learn about Walter O'Malley that maybe you didn't know that the San Francisco audience may find interesting?
Well, I think from a San Francisco point of view, I mean, he is really instrumental in the Giants being there today. In the spring of 1957, the Stoneham, and I mean, every kind of buddy knew that Stoneham was thinking of taking the Giants out of town. And then I think it was May of that year, he told a meeting of the other National League owners that he was going to move, and he was going to go to Minneapolis. He had the territorial rights to Minneapolis because he owned the Millers of the American Association. And it seemed like, you know, it was a new market. It looked like a good market. But then after the meeting, O'Malley got a hold of him and said, Horace, you know, I'm thinking of moving to L.A. Why don't you think about San Francisco? And then when Stoneham showed some interest, O'Malley went to the people he was talking to in Los Angeles, specifically the mayor, Norris Polson. And Polson, George Christopher, completed the triangle, and all of a sudden Stoneham is talking to George Christopher. And that leads to him not going to Minneapolis, but to going to San Francisco instead. And then both in, I guess it was 76, when Stoneham was looking to sell, and it looked like the team was going to Toronto. And then again in 92, I think it was, when Bob Lurie was looking to sell, and it looked like the team was going to Tampa. In both cases, well, not in both, in the first case, Walter, and in the second case, Peter O'Malley, were very instrumental within Major League Baseball, and especially in the National League, in pushing to find a solution within San Francisco to keep the team there, because the rivalry is very good for the Dodgers. And Walter recognized that back in 1957, and it's continued that, I mean, it's good business. Look at the crowd we had last night here at Dodger Stadium and the ones we're going to get the next couple of days. And it's the same thing at AT&T. They sell out for each other.
Yep. So, yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, so they did step up in their own way for whatever interest they did have to keep baseball in San Francisco, and it was threatened.
Right.
Those couple of times. O'Malley had the reputation sort of as a shrewd businessman. Jackie Robinson, for some reason, for many years, wouldn't go back to L.A. What was the basis of that?
That was Robinson had kind of an extreme loyalty and a justified loyalty, no doubt about it, to Branch Rickey. And he felt O'Malley had kind of pushed Rickey out the door, which to some extent he had. And Jackie remained very loyal to Rickey. O'Malley had made some. Well, O'Malley thought that Robinson was a bit of a grandstander. He believed ball players should play ball. And, of course, Jackie was very political and very committed to the civil rights movement. And O'Malley didn't necessarily object to what Jackie was saying, but he objected to the controversy. He wanted his ball players to be, you know, perfect paragons for PR. And so they had a bad relationship, but Mrs. Robinson, she had a good relationship with O'Malley over the years, and eventually Jackie softened. If you read, there was like three or four autobiographies that Jackie wrote or cooperated with on somebody else, and if you read them in order, each one of them is slightly softer on O'Malley. And then Peter made a very big effort to reconcile things with Jackie and was fairly successful and actually brought him back to the ballpark for the last time, just a short time before he died. So Walter and Jackie had a difficult relationship, shall we say, and it was really Peter who brought Jackie back to the team. And, of course, the team is constantly bringing up his name and using it for marketing purposes, as MLB as a whole does as well.
In the early years of O'Malley, Andy McHugh with us. I'd like to take just a couple more minutes with you. MCCUE, the book is Mover and Shaker, Walter O'Malley, the Dodgers and Baseball's Westward Expansion. The early years of O'Malley, shrewd bankruptcy lawyer, ended up with a couple of partners and getting an interest in the Dodgers. But, you know, looking back in the early, and you do a great job of looking at his early life, did you ever see this coming? Do you think he ever saw this coming, where he would be sort of the paragon of Major League Baseball, the like you say, the mover and shaker, the guy who sort of ran things? You ever saw that? Because he was a businessman. How did the baseball come about?
It was an opportunity. I mean, he developed, as I said, as a bankruptcy lawyer, and he did a lot of work for the Brooklyn Trust Company. And the Brooklyn Trust Company, one of its major clients, and certainly its most high-profile client, was the Dodgers. And the bank, George McLaughlin, the head of the bank, essentially put O'Malley into the upper reaches of the management because he trusted him to make business decisions. He'd done this with all kinds of Brooklyn Trust customers throughout the Depression, that he put O'Malley in there just to keep an eye on things and make suggestions, and he did that with the Dodgers. And O'Malley was not a particularly strong baseball fan. He played briefly as a boy, like all of us do. But he saw the opportunity, and he was a businessman, and he moved to take advantage of that opportunity. And I think one of his strengths was that he knew what his strengths were. He didn't, like some of the high-profile owners we have seen who were businessmen, Peter Angelos, George Steinbrenner, Ted Turner, people like that, who were also, you know, what they say, not baseball people. O'Malley kept his hands off the baseball decisions. Buzzy Bavese told me that in all the years Buzzy for the Dodgers, 20 years under O'Malley, O'Malley only once told him to make a baseball-related deal. Everything else was Buzzy's realm. He was there. He was given a budget. He was to live within it. So he knew his strengths. He knew what he was good at. He was good at the business side. He was good at the legal side. He was good working with other owners. But he wasn't going to dictate trades or draft choices or anything like that. And so I think that was a lot of the basis of his success. He would look for good people like Bavese and give them the freedom to exercise their talents and not try and be everything to everybody.
Ah, very good. Well, good book. I don't want to take up too much time, but of course, Maury Wills, you know, he sort of upset O'Malley, and O'Malley said, get rid of him. Is that
right,
the one?
That was the exception.
That was the exception.
Yeah. And he embarrassed O'Malley in front of the Emperor of Japan, in effect. And that was the straw that broke the camel's back. And Maury wasn't exactly being upfront about what was going on. I mean, he said he had to get an injury treated, and it turns up he's playing the banjo at
Las Vegas.
Don Ho's. Well, first in Honolulu at Don Ho's, and then later in Vegas.
Great story.
And he wasn't getting any treatment for this supposed injury.
What a story.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, great book. Congratulations, Andy McHugh, MCCUE, Mover and Shaker. It is a definitive biography, I think, of O'Malley. I learned so much about the business guy and about how he got his hands into everything. And boy, he didn't miss a trick. It was like sneaking the fastball past Hank Aaron. You didn't sneak anything past Walter O'Malley, and that's how.
Oh, that was good. There's all the stories, the drinking fountain story, and all the other stories. There's a lot of great tales about the guy.
All right, hey, congratulations! I appreciate having you on, Andy. Thank you.
Okay, Marty. Thank you.
Very good book, Mover and Shaker. Good Father's Day. That's not a bad Father's Day gift for everybody. This is one I've picked it up and I've read a good part of it, and I learned a lot about this man who kind of actually, you know, saved baseball in San Francisco. You know, he knew that without the Giants here, he was in trouble in L.A. So for business reasons, whatever, he did stand up and kept the Giants, gave him a little bit more time to make their deal. So we'll talk more about that.